But that's the only time we had a doctor. We never had a doctor. We was always well. Never had any problems. We grew chinnabark trees, which is sold in the drugstores called cascara bark.
And what's it used for?
Yeah, it's a laxative.
Oh.
And it's a good one. And it's a bitter one. That's the only medicine we ever took.
Got a beard and it's looking something fierce. Having beers with my peers and talking rap careers. Reflecting on the years, connecting on the tears. Shipwreck faith ain't always as appears. I'm bringing you fresh music, I'm bringing fresh ideas. I'm bringing you the dudes in the indie music biz. Chilling at the shows and talking about the pain with people who learned how to face it and be sane. Sipping on a brew, doing interviews. No topics off the table, but we focus on breakthroughs. So kick up your feet, we're gonna put it in check. You're listening to Brews, Beards, and Shipwrecks.
1, 2, 1, 2, a mic check, Stone Bands, Royal Ruckus on the scene, just to announce.
We got the brews, we got the beards, tasty interviews for your ears to hear.
1, 2, 1, 2, a mic check, Stone Bands, Royal Ruckus on the scene, just to announce.
We got the brews, we got the beards, tasty interviews for your ears to hear.
Welcome to this episode of Brews, Beards, and Shipwrecks. Merry Christmas 2021. Welcome to the podcast. My name is Jamie Bennett. I am the host of this here podcast. I'm also known as Chun Jay from a rap group called Royal Ruckus. My co-host is Nomadic Vagabond. He is not here today. He is celebrating Christmas with his family. Today, I want to talk a little bit about what this podcast is all about. We talk about a number of things, you know, hip hop, music, culture, like that's important. That's kind of the backdrop. That's part of who we are as the hosts of the podcast. We also like to talk about beards, beard care. Not all of our guests have beards. We talk about craft beer, and next week's episode, we'll be talking about rum. So there's a lot of great fun stuff we talk about, but like what we're really about is ordinary people. Like, this podcast is about how everybody has a story, and that story matters, and it's full of all kinds of things. That's where the shipwrecks come in. We talk a lot about the intersection of faith and doubt, you know, struggles of your relationship with God, or struggles just in this world with other people. We all wrestle with something. And so what we try to do here is to get into those stories and see how things are handled by people, how that affects their life, how that affects their faith, their growth, all of that. We especially like stories of redemption, stories that bring hope, stories that bring strength. Well, I'm really excited that here, at a time when family is so important, right? During the holidays, everybody is focused on their family and they're trying to reconnect with loved ones and friends. It's traditionally a time you do that. And so that seemed appropriate that I was able to dig into the archives. Now, sometimes when we run, you know, so-called digging in the archive shows, they're interviews that I did on other podcasts or radio shows in the last couple of years. This one, however, is much older. You could almost say that this was my first experience being an interviewer of a podcast, so to speak. I believe I was in seventh grade. This would have been the early 90s. And I interviewed my great-grandmother's sister, Mary Daniels. Now, Aunt Mary lived around the corner from my great-grandmother in East Bakersfield. And we went and saw her pretty frequently. And especially after my great-grandparents passed, my mother and I would take a lot of time to go over to Aunt Mary's house. She was just like the most wonderful person you'll meet. And I'll tell you one little story that I don't share really on this episode, but you kind of have to understand this. She had an open door policy for many years with the children in the neighborhood. And she lived in a neighborhood that, you know, was kind of run down at that point. It was a more impoverished neighborhood. And she had an open door policy for any of the kids in the neighborhood. They could just walk right in and she would give them like a cookie and, you know, chat with them for a few minutes and see them on their way. And she was just a saintly, wonderful woman. She actually had to, in the last couple of years of her life, she had to put an end to that practice because it was getting a little unsafe. She actually had some of the little older children, you know, playing tricks on her and sneaking in the back door and stealing her purse and things like that. But she always loved. And I can tell you, I never remember her saying anything negative. When she stopped giving out the cookies, she was not angry at the thieves. She was sad that she couldn't continue having that policy for the children who were kind. And all I know is that Aunt Mary, to the day she died, was one of the kindest, sweetest, most gentle people I've ever met, filled with love. When I was in college, I actually used to stop by there quite a bit, and I would sometimes take a lunch over there and sit with her. And I formed a very special relationship with her. And one of the fun facts, you know, this podcast is connected to my music group, Royal Ruckus. And Royal Ruckus was started in Bakersfield, California, in the late 90s. Our first album was called Microphone, and we self-produced and self-released the whole thing. And she didn't even have a CD player. And I remember taking a copy over there to show her, and she wanted to keep it. And of course, I was going to just give it to her, and she insisted on paying for it. She wouldn't let me leave without me taking money for it. She was just a beautiful human being. So this interview is from the early 90s. I was tasked to do this by my social studies teacher in seventh grade. Not a very great interviewer. My mom was in the room, and she helped quite a bit. There's a lot of times, you know, my 11-year-old self or whatever, 12 or however old I was saying things like, "Do you have any other memories?" You know, so thankfully, though, she was willing to talk. We have about a 45-minute interview. It's a voice from the past. She was born in 1907, and she spent most of her life in Bakersfield, California. Or actually in a part of Bakersfield that wasn't even Bakersfield yet. So there's some interesting Bakersfield history, interesting family history for me. And, you know, because I have, you know, distant cousins and stuff in Bakersfield with the name Daniels, you know, and other last names that are related to her. So this is something that I wanted to preserve. We had it on a cassette tape. And at some point, it was transferred onto a mini disc. And now today, I'm bringing it to the podcast. Now, I could keep going on, but I think it's time to hear from Aunt Mary in her own words. A little sneak preview. I want to tell you I have a special announcement coming up at the break in the middle of the show. You won't want to miss it. Without further ado, here is Mary Daniels.
My great aunt Mary Daniels, and Aunt Mary, do you have like an interesting fact, hobby, or experience?
Hobby? Well, mostly in hobbies, I like to go to the community house and play bingo, and I enjoy reading a lot, and I work crossword type puzzles. Mm-hmm. That's about the main hobbies I have.
And when's your birthday?
My birthday is January the 23rd, and I was born in 1907.
And where was that?
At La Junta, Colorado. Mm-hmm. And then we moved to Topeka, Kansas, and that's where your grandma O'Farrell was born.
And do you have any memorable experiences?
Well,
yeah, I know you do.
Yeah.
Take all the time.
Yeah,
we've had a lot of
memorable experiences, good and bad. We've had several deaths in the family, which wasn't real good, but we had, even during the Depression, when things was real hard, we had to move out of Bakersfield up into Inyo County, and we lived in a railroad camp, and our house was a boxcar house. And I had my three little boys when we moved up there, and while we were there, I had two little girls born to me. My youngest little girl was an invalid as long as she lived, but I've lost three girls and one boy. And I've still two boys, and that's a real happy thing. And the boy that I have here in Bakersfield is just precious. He couldn't be beat. And I've had a good life. I've always had a roof over my head. I've always had food of some kind to eat. I never went hungry. And I don't know, I think I've had a pretty good experience. I feel like I've been a pretty lucky person, and I've got a family even yet around me that are all loving, and I love all of them, and there's a lot of love in our family. And I think that's great. And I don't know if I can think of anything else to say or not.
Well, what was your education?
I went through the eighth grade. I was sick when the eighth grade come. I completed the eighth grade and started to go to high school, and I lost weight so fast they had to take me out of school. And then I studied music for about 3 years. That was my education. Then I got married and started raising children for their educations.
And what jobs have you had?
I worked, after my husband passed away, I worked first in a retirement home, in a rest home, and I took care of old people there. When I left there, I went to work in a cafeteria called Chuck's Wagon on Niles Street, and then when they closed down, I went to work at Sage's Department Store. And I worked in Sage's Department Store until I retired in 1972.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
And you learned how to drive too, didn't you?
Yeah, I learned how to drive while I was trying to learn how to work. I sure did.
And what kind of traveling have you done?
Well, for the first almost 12 years, we traveled constantly. My brother was born in a covered wagon, and they stopped at a farmhouse, and he was born. They went to Topeka, Kansas, and they had two boys there, lost one of them. Then they moved to La Jolla, Colorado, where I was born. Then they moved back to Topeka, Kansas, where your Grandma O'Farrell was born, and then we moved back to Alamosa, Colorado, and was there for about a year, I think. And then we moved to Utah, was there a short while. We moved to Mullen, Idaho. That's where I went to my first school, but we wasn't there very long until we moved to Spokane, Washington. And we went from Spokane, Washington down to Napa, Oregon. We lived there about 4 years, and I got up to the middle grades in there, and then we moved to Bakersfield, and I finished my education here. And outside of that, and then moving up to Inyo County when the Depression hit, when we moved back here, that's all the real traveling I've ever done.
You got to go to Hawaii once.
Huh?
Didn't you get to go to Hawaii once with Grandma?
Oh, yes, I went to Hawaii once with Grandma O'Farrell, and was there for about 3 days. Then they went on to Australia, and I came back to Bakersfield.
Can't forget your trip to Reno and stuff.
Yeah, we went to Reno quite a lot. We went up there to play in the jackpots up there. And I went whenever your Grandma O'Farrell went, I went. And we went up there almost every year for about 4, 5, 6 years. So that was part of my travel.
And now you travel to Laughlin.
Yeah,
huh?
I've done a lot of traveling. I sure have.
Well, what was happening back when you were in your youth?
Something that happened in my youth?
Yeah.
Well,
what do you mean,
what was going on during the times?
Well, most of the time, why, we were just existing from one spot to another. An awful lot of the time, we didn't have very much money. I remember when we were in Ogden, Utah, that my dad had couldn't get work there, and he went on up into Mullen, Idaho, and we was there in Utah, and my brother got out and sold newspapers, and then he mowed lawns, and my sister got out there and scraped the grass up into piles with our hands. And I remember that, but I was only about 5 years old when that happened. I remember one time when we were up in Napa, we were playing out on the school ground. I was at school, playing out on the school ground, and I and one of the girls were standing up in the swing and swinging, and we got to swinging too high, and I lost my hold. She happened to be on the underside, and I managed to get a hold of the rope again before we stopped, but I didn't never go swinging that way anymore. That was enough. When we went to school up in Oregon, we had to follow paths through woods to get to the school. We had about three different ways that we could go to school. We could go by the street, which was the longest, well, it wasn't a street, it was a road, that was the longest route to the school. And then we went, we could cut a cornerways across from our place up just cornerways and cut a little bit of that place off, or we could go back through the woods and then turn and come in at the back of the school. And I remember one time when we started, well, two different times up there. Once when we got near to the school and we had to cross a creek, and the creek was in flood, and we had to turn around and come all the way back home and go the other way to get to school, and we was late that morning. And then another time when we started up there, there was the path cut through, they sawed a pathway through a log, and someone went and tapped some kind of a little animal up on the side of that thing there where we had to go through, and I wouldn't go through there. And I turned around and started back, and my brother come back with me, and we was late that day getting to school. And we used to go once in a while when we was up there. We used to go to a neighbor's place quite a little ways from our place, and we bought milk from them, and we'd go up there early and help them to drive the cows in, and then we'd play until they got the cows milked, and then we'd come home. And one time we started up there, and I and your grandma started up there because my brother was too slow coming home, and we started out there after him, and we was walking along by the side of the road, and there was bushes and things there, and we got up there, and there was a web across the pathway, and a great big old hairy looking spider. and we wouldn't go through there. We went back until we could find a place to get out on the road. That scared us.
tell the story about when you were in Oregon, Mary, when your brother got his hand hurt.
No, that was my cousin.
Your cousin.
Yeah, my uncle and his family were there. He had three children, and the boy was the middle boy, was the middle child, and he and I were going to saw some wood off of the end of the log, and he got a hold of the handle of the saw. And he put his other hand underneath where the teeth of the saw was, and when he jerked the saw back, it sliced his hand wide open. And we got him into my mother, and she put a handful of sugar in there and a big piece of cotton and bound his and poured a little turpentine in there and bound his hand up like that. Just shut it up into a fist, and it stayed that way about 3 days. And when she opened it up to see what it was almost healed.
Huh.
Yeah, he just sliced it just corner ways.
It was right too far to go to the doctor's.
No, the only way we could go to a doctor, we had to catch a train in the morning and go to Astoria, Oregon, to the doctor. And then we had to wait till 5 o'clock at night to get back home on the train, because there was no roads in there when we moved there. There is now, but there weren't then. And we never go to a doctor. I think all the time we were there almost 5 years, and the only time anyone went to the doctor was when my mother took my grandmother into the doctor, and then they got their, had their teeth fitted there. But that's the only time we had a doctor. We never had a doctor. We was always well. Never had any problems. We grew chinnabark trees, which is sold in the drugstores called cascara bark. And we grew them trees on our lot. And those trees, you cut a circle around it as high up as you can and as low down as you can, and slice a straight line straight up to the top, to the bottom there, and you peel that bark off. And then those trees make new bark. And that stuff, we sold them that bark for 25 cents for a gunny sack full. And you go to the drugstore now and you pay about $3 for about a half a dozen pieces of bark.
And what's it used for?
Yeah, it's a laxative.
Oh.
And it's a good one. And it's a bitter one. That's the only medicine we ever took. That's what it is. But we sold, we peeled those trees, peeled that bark back from around them, and put them in gunny sacks, and sold them for 25 cents for a gunny sack full, and that probably about $500 or $600 if you buy it now.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So that's about the main thing I can remember. We all had a garden while we had there, and we had great big strawberries growing in our garden, and we had vegetables growing in there, and we had chickens. We had all the food we could eat practically off of our own place while we were there. A Swenson man came by once every 6 months, and my mother would get the flour. She'd get a 100-pound bag of flour and about a 5-gallon can of peanut butter, and just and she bought buckets of lard from the Swenson man. But other than that, we wasted everything we had up there.
Now, did you have your grandparents living with you then?
Yeah. My grandmother and grandfather moved to live with us when I was 5 years old, and they had lived with us before that, I know, because when they come in and started talking, we knew who it was right now. And we had was upstairs on pallets up in the upstairs, and we ran down those stairs. We were supposed to be going to bed, but bed just got misplaced because we recognized them right away. And their youngest boy was my Uncle Henry. We always called him just Henry because he was like a brother to us. And he was 3 years older than my brother and 8 years older than me. And he grew up with us too. When we all got in trouble, he got himself paddled right along with us. But Grandpa and Grandma lived with us until they passed away, and they came to my mother's when I was 5 and a half years old. And I think that was in Spokane, Washington, that they came to us. And then we moved to Napa, Oregon. And but they was with us for a long life, and we kept them until they passed away. And my grandfather passed away just shortly before I was married, and my grandmother passed away after I was married. So.
And then you guys all had your babies in the houses too, didn't you?
Yeah, all of our babies were born in the home. My first baby was born when we lived out close to Rosedale on a farm, and we lost her. And then, but they would have been able to have saved her if they'd have had the incubators and things like that they do nowadays, but they didn't have anything like that, and we lost her. And then my oldest boy Leon was born on on O Street. Then we moved to Ogden Avenue, and Robert and Claude was born on Ogden Avenue, and Claude was, Robert and Claude was born on Ogden Avenue, and Claude was 3 years old when we had to move up to up into Inyo County to a little town called Owenya, which was a railroad town. And then when I got expecting my two girls, before they were born, I came to Bakersfield and stayed with my mother, and they were born in this house. And Bernetti was born in 1933, and Beverly was born in 1935 in this house. All of my children were born in our homes. And my my first boy, when Leon, before he, no, my second boy, Claude, my third boy, Claude, when my third boy, Claude, was born, Mama had just got up from taking care of your grandmother with your Aunt Colleen. And then she had to leave her really a little quicker than she planned on leaving her, because I took down with Claude, and he was born 1 month after her boy, her girl Colleen was born. He was born.
So she was taking care of both of us.
And she took care of both of us. And then when Claude was several months old, why, he was starving, and we didn't know it. My milk was not doing good to him, and he was starving. And we knew that something was wrong with him. And one day, I had to go to town to get some medicine for one of the kids who was sick. And your grandmother, Grandma O'Farrell, took him and fed him. She was feeding Colleen, and she took him and fed him, and he ate like he was starved to death. And from that time on, he started picking up. So whenever I'd come down to my mother's house here, she would feed him while we was here. And then when I was at home, I would feed him what I could, and then I would give him a bottle. And he was partly bottle and part breastfed.
So, interesting. Yeah. Like his aunt.
Yeah, it was. If she hadn't had Colleen right at that time, he had probably died. Because I didn't know what was wrong with him. He was just starving to death.
Were there any types of popular music?
We had our popular music. It wasn't what you have nowadays. when I was growing up, we had jazz music.
Uh-huh.
And all the music was jazz, and we had the Sheik of Araby, and I still know all of that, but I can't sing it anymore because my voice squeaks. but I know all of that, and I and your grandma used to sing an awful lot together. We'd sing all kinds of songs. I can't remember all of them anymore, but I can't think of all of them. But we sang an awful lot of them. I've got a bunch of them in that book that we used to sing, sing together. We sang a lot all the time. We get to singing when we're washing dishes. Our job was to wash the dishes. Well, I would wash the dishes, and your grandma would dry the dishes, and we'd be a singing. And if we were singing something that was pretty peppy, I'd have dishes piling up ahead of her right along. But because I kept time with my music. And then when we'd get to singing a slow song, and she didn't have sense enough to keep me singing fast songs, she'd catch up with me, and then she'd get mad at me because I was too slow. But if she would keep me a singing a fast song, why, we'd go along real good with those dishes. That's about the only time we ever had any trouble at all, was when we was washing dishes.
Were there like popular cars or clothes?
What?
Were there popular cars or clothes?
Yeah, they had different cars and clothes. We had we owned an Oakland car, and we owned, we when we had them, we had just the open cars with side curtains onto them, we had a Chevrolet at one time, and we had a Ford, and I can't remember. There was another one, something like the Oakland, but it wasn't. We had the Oakland too, but when they first came out with the cars that have glass around them, my dad wouldn't have one of those, not for any money. To get smashed up in a car like that, well, you'd be cut to pieces. And he wouldn't have one of them for no reason at all. And then one day, we went over to Pismo Beach, and coming back, there was a coupe upside down in the ditch, and there wasn't a broken glass in it. And that's the first time that my dad was agreeable to get a car with glass around it, because see, that car was upside down there and it didn't break any glass. but I don't know. I guess when we came to California, we were coming in a Chalmers car, and it was a big car, mm-hmm. and it had two seats in the front, and it had a wide seat across the back, and then it had two fold-up seats in it. And we started to California in that car, and we had all of our camping equipment. We had a tent and all of our bedding, and we had all of our food and all of our clothes in that car, and we had a trunk there was a trunk built on the car, and then we had another car trunk and a toolbox tied on the back, and we didn't go only about two blocks maybe until we had a flat tire. So then we unloaded the trunk and the tools, and we left them with a neighbor until we got settled, and then he shipped them to us. Mm. And then we made it with all the rest of our camping equipment, but we had our tent, and we had all of our bedding, and I don't know how we had them piled on the fenders, we had them piled on top, and
Grandma and Grandpa were with you?
Yeah, Grandpa and Grandma Morris was with us, and Henry. There was eight of us in the car. Our family was five, and they had eight in the car. And all together, and all of our bedding, and enough clothes to carry us through till we got our trunk, and I don't know how we ever made it through, but we had a lot of trouble until we took 3 months to get from Napa, Oregon, to Medford, Oregon, and there we sold our car there and came the rest of the way on the train. But took us 3 months. We was stopped everywhere we turned around. Nearly we were stopped. We was in Oakland, Oregon, for 3 weeks. My dad sprained his ankle awfully bad and couldn't drive, and we stayed. We stayed in Oakland there in a vacant house that the old people told us we could live and stay in there. We camped the first night at the bottom of a hill, and it came a pouring down rain, and that rain came right down through our tent, and we had to dry all of our bedding and everything. And so then we stayed in a house, vacant house up there, and people were real nice up there. They gave us a bunch of apples and fruits of different kinds and things, and every place nearly we went, people were real nice to us. When we landed in Napa, Oregon, we was broke. That's as far as we could go. My dad hadn't been able to work because he had hurt his back real bad. And we were flat broke. And we got there in the depot, and one of the neighbors, later, came in there, and he could see that my mother was awful worried. And he asked if he could help her, and she said, "Well, I don't know what we're going to do. We don't have any place to go, and we're broke without money and no food or anything." And he says, "Well, you come with me." And he took her to the grocery store. It was right by the depot. And he told them, he says, "Give them all the food they need." And he says, "I'm going to take her to a house where I know that she can move the kids in." And he took us to the church manse. The church minister had a home of his own, and that was vacant, and he took us there. And he took Mama down to a little house that was also, that the people weren't there. They had furniture in the house. They weren't there. They were moved someplace else. So he took enough of that furniture out, a stove and a table and some two or three chairs, and fixed us up there, and Papa made some benches for the rest of us to sit on, and we moved in, and then one of the neighbors gave my brother a hen and a setting of eggs, and we started our chickens that way, and everybody was real nice to us. We had a lot of lots of good times and lots of sorrow, but then that's part of life.
Mm-hmm. Well, what kinds of popular clothes were there?
Well, I was married in a King Tut dress. And it was the style that they wore in King Tut's day. And that was my wedding dress. Some of the time they had long dresses that come clear to our ankles, and sometimes they come up while we were still growing up, clear up above our knees, but I wouldn't wear mine above my knees, but your grandma did. But she was younger, she didn't care. But I wouldn't wear them up above my knees. But they had, during that time, they had what they called a balloon skirt. And it was a real full skirt, and it had elastic around the bottom, and it ballooned out all around you. That was one of the styles they had. And then we had a one dress that Mama made us that was just a plain dress, and then it had an over dress front and back, and a tie comes around. We had that dress. I don't know, I guess otherwise just about like what everybody we wore. Some of our dresses was made Mother Hubbard style. That was up just high waistline, and I guess that's about the different styles that we had.
Memories.
Well, you've been getting lots of memories.
Yeah.
I think I got you about the main part of memories that I probably could sit and think for an hour or two and tell you lots of things else.
Well, Merry Christmas, everyone. This is Jamie Bennett from Brews, Beards, and Shipwrecks interrupting this interview to make a special announcement. So I actually have a special Christmas present for my mom that you guys can all benefit from. Ever since I was little, my mother would read to me. We had a special chair she would read to me in, but then also every morning, all the way through high school, my mother would read to me while I was eating breakfast. When I moved away, moved to Nashville and was doing music out there, my mom started sending me newspaper clippings, probably even some church bulletins and things, but it was mostly like newspaper clippings. She'd send them to me in the mail. Now, from time to time, I still get those. I don't get them as much anymore, but it has always been such a treat for me to get an envelope in the mail, because I've lived thousands of miles away from my parents for half of my life. And I get these things, and it connects me to home, and it connects me to what my mom is thinking about and what the local newspaper has. And it's just incredibly cool. I am returning the favor. For Christmas, I have developed a new podcast, which will be launching after the new year, called Clips for Mom. And I'm going to be sending my mom audio clips instead of newspaper clips. I'll be sharing papers I'm writing for school. I'm studying theology, so I'll be, you know, sharing some of my schoolwork with her. I'm going to be reading excerpts from certain books. If I can find some old things I wrote back in high school, you know, if I find interesting newspaper clippings or articles that I want to read that are unique and make sense that I would share with my mom, I'm going to record those. I'm going to put them right there. So it's a companion podcast to Brews, Beards, and Shipwrecks, and it's going to be called Clips for Mom. The website is going up this week, clipsformom.com. Hope you'll tune in after the new year. Now back to Mary Daniels on the Brews, Beards, and Shipwrecks podcast.
Well, how about your impression of youth today?
Well, I think they're, on the average, I found most of them pretty good. I think about the average about what they always were, because as far back as you can remember, there were bad and good. And I think that they're pretty well on the average. They're different. They think different from what we did, but they're coming out just as good as we did. They're turning out perfectly good. So our man that's running for president, Clinton, he was an example of what they were when he was younger. Why, he was just like the kids of his age were. Now he's going on to president. So I think that on the average, I don't see anything especially too wrong with the kids. You'll see some of them that's kind of bad, but you also see a lot of them that's really good. I have kids coming around here all the time, and I've only since 1962, when I moved here, I've only had one child to come to this house that I had to tell him, all right, now you straighten out or home you go. And he still started to cut up, and I said, all right, go on home. And he says, I'll be good. And he was, and he came back so many times after that, and he never cussed me another bit of trouble, never did. He knew I meant it, and that was it. But whenever they come here, I tell them what they can do and what they can't do, and they listen to me, and they do what I tell them. Anyone has ever said, you're not my mama. Not one of them ever has. So I think they come out pretty good.
Well, do you have like a favorite expression or saying?
Well, I don't know. Once in a while I'll say, doggone it, or something like that. That's about the manner. Once in a great, great while, I want to get extra aggravated, I might say, blame the luck. But I don't think I have any special sayings.
Those are good.
Once in a while, I'll come up with something that I've heard my grandma say or something like that. But most of the time, I say, doggone it, when something goes wrong. I don't never swear. My mother would now never allow us to swear. When we'd come up with a word we'd heard and it wasn't the right word, we got our mouth washed out with soap. And we didn't like that, so we just didn't say those words. My kids didn't either while they were little, but they kind of get a little rough once in a while in their talk now, but they didn't when they were little. I'd say, where did you hear that word? They said, well, Daddy said it. Daddy was out working on the car, and he'd say something, and they'd come in and say it, and I'd say, where'd you hear that word? Daddy said it. All right. I said, you're going to get a licking now, and when Daddy comes in, he's going to get a licking. And when he come in, I'd spank him. And he said, well, that's what get spanked for now. And I said, you said naughty words when you was out there.
What are you doing today?
Today I went uptown, and then I went to the grocery store, and I went to the drugstore, and then I came home. And I've just been sitting working crossword, circle of word puzzles since then until you kids come.
Now, who drove you? You don't drive anymore, right?
No, I sold my car. I'm too old. And I didn't want to be responsible for maybe putting somebody in the hospital or in the cemetery. And I'm old enough that I could have a stroke at any time, and my heart is not good. And I could have a heart attack at any time, and if I'm sitting at a wheel when something like that happens, someone might get hurt or killed. And if it was me, I wouldn't care, but I wouldn't want to hurt somebody and put them in the hospital, so I gave up my car and sold my car, and I have finally in my whole life I have to be dependent, and I don't like that, but I have to be.
Who took you today?
Robert took me today. Yeah. He takes me most all the time. If he's here in town, he'll take me. But now when we go to bingo, then Aunt Lizabelle's girl Bernice t- takes us to bingo, and then she comes over and picks us up and brings us back. So, and when we take a notion to go over to Laughlin or some of those places, why, she takes us out to catch the bus, and then she comes, and either she or else one of the ladies that's going with us, sometimes her husband comes and picks us up and brings us home.
Oh.
But we just have to depend on someone, and I never was a person to depend on anybody, and it's hard to get used to it.
Yeah.
Got a frog in my throat. There, that's one of my sayings. When we first came to Bakersfield, it wasn't, we didn't come to Bakersfield, we came to what is East Bakersfield now, but it was Kern at that time. It wasn't Kern City, it was Kern. And we, and when we moved here, up on the SP Depot was still Sumner. The town had been Sumner before it became Kern. And when Kern became, when we lived in Kern, we did our shopping on Baker Street. It was the only shopping center there were there. And the town, Kern, went out as far as one block beyond, what is the name of that street? Brown Street. There was one house beyond Brown Street. And then everything was desert country from there on out. We used to go out on Easter Sunday and boil eggs and take them out there and hide them in the sagebrush out around there. And they had kind of what we call dry lakes. They were just clay tops. And we used to make hopscotch signs on that and jump and play hopscotch along in there, and we wandered around. There was nothing up on the hills around here, and they were hills at that time. It wasn't flat country at all. It was rolling hills, and people would go out there and throw their dump their cans and all of their trash in down in the gullies in between those humps. And we'd go out there and wander around over those hills. We'd find wildflowers, and then we'd go down through those dumps and find what we thought was real nice. And we'd take them home, and Mama would put them in the garbage. But we would think they were great. And we hunted dumps down all through those hills. It's the main fancy houses up and through there now. And up there where you were, we wandered all through those hills and found mushrooms and wildflowers, and there was sagebrush all over up there, and it was hills, rolling hills,
wow,
all up through there.
And then Bakersfield was like 2 miles.
Yeah, Bakersfield was almost about a 2 mile space between Kern and Bakersfield. And Baker on 19th Street was the main street to get from Kern to Bakersfield. And right there at Union Avenue, there used to be streetcar tracks. And the streetcar barns was right there at the corner of Union Avenue and 19th Street. And then there was a little short street behind the streetcar tracks, a little short street. And there was a hill behind that, and they had a dugout place from that side street back into that hill, and Reese's Hospital stood in that spot right there behind there. And then over by where the ditch goes through from the park over there, there was a laundry place. And that's the only thing almost, I think there was three houses on 19th Street. And that's all there were on 19th Street. The whole street was vacant, everything was vacant. Oh, way down by Baker Street, there was a stable. And they had horses in there, and riding horses in there. And that runned out and killed all of those poor horses. That was horrible. That was one of the bad things. And we used to it would get real awfully hot here. They don't have hot weather like they had then, because there was no trees out around. There was no gardening out around. There was at one farm that where they grew watermelons, and then there was one olive orchard out there, and that's where I first tasted my first olive, and I didn't like it. It was on the tree. It was free and brown and ripe, and black and ripe, and I snitched one off of that tree, and I was sure sorry I did. I don't know. I think I've about told everything. Main thing that I can think of now, the Jefferson Street was the further street north, and the Williams School was about two or three blocks from any house, and it was just one single brick building. And that's where I went to the Lincoln School for about 3 months, and then I went to the Williams School, and then when we moved up close to Baker Street, I went to the Washington School, which is just business buildings now on Baker. And we went to that old library to get our information on our schoolwork. And I think they call it the Beale Library now, but I don't know if it had a name at that time or not. It was just the library, but it was right by the side of the school. And we got our information there for schoolwork. And I don't know if there's anything else I can think of or not.
All right. Well, my Aunt Mary, my great Aunt Mary, says that she had a really wonderful life. But she does admit, you know, she had some hard times. But really, she had real hard times. Like, when she lived in the boxcar, that was tough. And, like, once they got snowed in and they couldn't get out. And, like, they were running out of food and stuff. And she used to walk with my great-grandma, which was her sister, to Green Frog Market. And then every single morning. And then my great-grandma died, and then she didn't really know what to do, so she started visiting my grandpa, and you know, to check up on him. And she kept visiting him, you know, and then he died, and she really didn't know what to do after that, and pretty recently she gave up her car because she's been having heart problems in the past, and she was afraid she might have a heart attack and hurt someone. She's just not a self-centered type of person. She's just thinks of everyone else before her. And like a daughter of hers died at 15, and my aunt Mary just raised her for those 15 years and just broke her heart. She's just had a lot of heartbreaks, and she'll always mean a lot to our family. And we just are glad we have her, and really, she's just a blessing, and she just loves her relatives and her sons. And most people in her situation would have just bottled up at all she's gone through. But she has so much love in her heart for everyone, because just you can tell she just wants to help everyone else before herself. And she's a good lady. I guess that's all I have to say. So.
Thanks for tuning in to this special edition of Brews, Beards, and Shipwrecks. Once again, I'm your host, Jamie Bennett, also known as Chunjay from Royal Ruckus. My co-host, Nomadic Vagabond, is celebrating Christmas with his family. We hope everybody has a blessed new year. You know, check out our Instagram. Nomadic runs that. It's at BrewsBeards. We also have a website, a web address, brewsbeards.com. We'll take you right to our podcast archive so you can share the show with friends. You know, it helps if you subscribe so you don't miss an episode. We don't release on a particular day or particular schedule, so you want to always make sure you're subscribed for that. And, you know, if you have a friend that you think might appreciate the podcast, show them how to subscribe too. I'm also a host of the Bad Books of the Bible podcast on Ancient Faith Radio. You can check that out at badbooksofthebible.com if you're interested in what some people call the Apocrypha. We're doing a little bit of like a Bible study and historical exploration of some really interesting books that are in some Bibles and not others. And of course, check out clipsformom.com where I send clips to my mother regularly. Thanks for tuning in. You are now listening to Royal Ruckus.
Hey.